Welcome to today's episode of the Not Just a Lawyer podcast. I'm Sarah Avery of Sarah Avery Legal Practice, and today I will be taking you through the new law in the ACT, which is the Sexuality and Gender Identity Conversion Practices Bill of 2020. It's actually been passed into law on the 4th of September 2020. It was notified. It will be in effect on the 4th of March 2021, and it's now known as the Sexuality and Gender Identity Conversion Practices Act of 2020. Now, the purpose of this podcast is to simply explain what is in this law. It's to explain the content. It's not to comment on whether it's a good law or a bad law. It's just that it's a new law and people are probably very interested to know what it says. While the purpose isn't to give the pros and cons, but simply to explain, I'm really happy to give my personal opinion so you know where I'm coming from with this. I think it's for the most part good. It has some drawbacks, but I'm not really here to comment on that. Overall, I think it's a really good thing that a law banning this practice has been passed, and I think there's always room for improvement and making things better as we move ahead in terms of refining laws and making sure they're fit for purpose. So my purpose here today is not to be pro or con, really, although I am happy to tell you where I stand on it. It's just to tell you kind of what it says so that you don't have to go read it chapter and verse for yourself if you're not inclined to do that but would like to know. I'm also really pleased to say that I have the privilege of recording this podcast today on the traditional lands of the Ngunnawal people, and I pay my respects to their elders past and present. I'm not sure if you can tell, but my voice is a little different recording this episode as I'm recovering from some surgery. And so I'd ask for your indulgence if I sound a little strange, but I think it's such an important area to talk about. It's such an interesting law that we should cover it as soon as possible. And so not waiting for my full recovery, I'm just getting into it. And thanks again for listening. So let's go back to absolute basics. I told you the name of this act and that it is effective from the 4th of March 2021. Now, when laws are being developed, you might know they're called bills, and they go before the legislature, and sometimes they go before things like committees to be looked at. And quite a lot of the time when something new is being passed into law, different organisations in the community are asked to comment on them, and the purpose of that is to try and make sure that when the law goes before Parliament, different viewpoints have been taken into account, glaring problems have been pointed out and hopefully fixed, and things like that. And so another thing that happens when a bill, which is sort of like the draft form, I guess you could put it, of a piece of legislation is being put forward and the Parliament is being asked to pass it into law, a lot of the time an explanatory statement is prepared, and that's exactly what it sounds like. It's an explanation explaining why this law is being put in place. So I thought that what I might tell you about is the explanatory statement to start with. Now, this was presented with the bill on the 13th of August 2020, and then we'll talk briefly also about the supplementary explanatory statement that was published on the 27th of August 2020. These things, as I said, are designed to tell you, or well, to tell the politicians who are considering whether to say yes or no, what the purpose of the draft legislation is, what the purpose of the bill is, and to help them think about it and whether it should or shouldn't pass. So let's have a look at those first. Then we'll have a look at the content of the act. And then we will finish up, hopefully all a little bit wiser about what this new law actually means. So let's first look at the explanatory statement for the Sexuality and Gender Identity Conversion Practices Bill 2020. It was presented by Andrew Barr and Shane Rattenbury. It's described as a significant bill, which is a bill that has been assessed as likely to have significant engagement of human rights and to require more detailed reasoning in relation to compatibility with the Human Rights Act 2004, which is an ACT, Australian Capital Territory Act. An overview of the bill is provided. So basically, it's there to prohibit certain practices aimed at changing a person's sexuality or gender identity, and those are sort of described, I guess, under the headline term of conversion practices. The bill made it a criminal offence to conduct conversion practices on a protected person, and we'll go into what that means a bit later, or to remove a protected person from the ACT for the purpose of conducting conversion practices. And they say that a protected person means a child or a person who has impaired decision-making ability in relation to a matter relating to the person's health or welfare. So let's pause there. A child, that's fairly obvious. A person with impaired decision-making ability in relation to a matter relating to the person's health or welfare. We're looking there at people more broadly, and this is definitely not legal advice, but broadly we're looking at people who might be the subject of, say, a guardianship order or treatment, perhaps under the Mental Health Treatment Act, but someone who isn't at the moment considered at law to be capable of making decisions on their own behalf in relation to their health or welfare. It might be someone for whom there is an active, enduring power of attorney operating. So perhaps that person's appointed attorney, who's usually a trusted family member or friend, is already making decisions in relation to their health and well-being. So we're talking essentially about kids and people who are in some way vulnerable. The bill also provided a civil mechanism, so not just a criminal offence, but a civil mechanism through the ACT Human Rights Commission for people harmed by conversion practices to make a complaint. And when the complaint is made, it goes to the ACT Human Rights Commission and a conciliation occurs. Now, a conciliation is a type of restorative practice sometimes. It can be aimed towards rebuilding a relationship between people, but sometimes the aims are a lot more modest. It is just essentially getting both sides to put their views to each other and perhaps walk away with an understanding of each other. But you would have to accept that a lot of the time, particularly with these kind of matters, conciliations aren't going to be successful. That is, everyone's not going to walk away and think, that was a good discussion, I'm glad we have it, we understand each other, we have no problems with each other anymore. So if not successfully conciliated, the complaint can then be referred to the ACAT, that's the ACT Civil and Administrative Tribunal. Importantly, the explanatory statement says that the bill does not prohibit a person providing support and affirmation of an individual's identity and choices. So you can be like, yep, I understand where you're coming from, and that's fine by me, no problems. Conversion practices do not include practices that assist a person undergoing or considering undergoing a gender transition, that assist a person to express their gender identity, that provide acceptance, support, or understanding of a person, or facilitate a person's coping skills, social support, or identity exploration and development. It also doesn't prohibit practices in line with professional medical standards. So that's a really important statement of intent there as well. If there is a standard professional medical treatment out there, that is not prohibited by the Act. Well, that's not the intention. There are some terms in the explanatory material that it might be useful for me to very briefly explain. The purpose of the bill, and now the law, is to prevent conversion practices. And the explanatory material says that conversion practices are based in an ideology that LGBTQ people are broken or are natural, and conversion practices encompass a wide range of practices that seek to, and it's, this is in quotes, fix people to become or express a heterosexual or cisgender identity. Now, you may not have heard the word cisgender before, but basically it is just a word that means someone who is not transgender. It means someone who identifies and feels comfortable with the gender that was assigned to them at birth. That gender is usually assigned to someone based on their primary sex characteristics, so basically their external genitalia. For most people, their gender and their sex are the same, and you can think of gender as kind of the way you see yourself, the way you think about yourself in your own mind, whether you identify as a man or a woman, as non-binary or in another way. It may be that you identify as having no gender. It's relatively open these days to understand that people might have a different gender expression, or a different gender identity to the one that you might think, simply by looking at someone's physical appearance. Sometimes the way that they express themselves or dress or look is not the same as how they see themselves inside. Or it may be that for whatever reason, they have chosen to express their gender in a non-conforming way. So there are a lot of people out there who are potentially vulnerable to conversion practices because they fall under the LGBTQ umbrella. There is also an underpinning assumption in this bill, and it comes through in the explanatory material, which is that conversion practices cause harm. It is stated in the explanatory material that experiences from survivors of conversion practices in the ACT and Australia reveal the extent and long-term impact of this harm. And these practices are reported to cause depression, suicidality, which means, you know, thinking about suicide or acting on suicidal impulses, anxiety, decreased sexual function, poor self-esteem, social isolation, and decreased capacity for intimacy. And that comes from a publication by La Trobe University, Gay and Lesbian Health, Victorians, and the Human Rights Law Centre. And that publication is called Preventing Harm, Promoting Justice, Responding to LGBT Conversion Therapy in Australia. And that was published in 2018. So, it's quite upsetting to think about people suffering to that degree. And so if this has made you feel like you'd like to talk to someone, please do not hesitate to give Lifeline a call on 131114. Or if there's someone you know who may have experienced these kind of practices, please don't hesitate to give that number to them. Now, moving on with the explanatory statement, the authors of that statement also say there's no evidence to suggest any benefits, nor that sexuality or gender identity can be changed by undertaking conversion practices. So the countervailing basis for putting this law forward is that there's no benefit to conversion practices, and there's actually no evidence suggesting that you can change someone's sexuality or gender identity by undergoing conversion practices or by forcing someone else to undergo them. And further, these practices have been condemned by peak national medical bodies, and some of those national medical bodies include the Australian Medical Association and the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists and the Australian Psychological Society, and there are others. So the purpose of this bill is to ban conversion practices. The first way that it does that is to have a civil regime dealing with them, and the other way that it does that is to have a criminal regime. Now, the criminal regime is fairly limited, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. What I'd like to do is look through the explanatory material and tell you a bit about what the civil part of it is. So civil means just not criminal, basically, if I could put it in a nutshell for you like that. So the civil part of the law is that the ACT Human Rights Commission has the power to engage in conciliations. Now, I talked a little bit about what they are, The reason why this approach is taken is because the ACT government understands that a lot of people who are involved in conversion practices might be involved in those because they are within a community of faith. And it might be that as part of that community of faith and the practice of that faith, they are encouraged to undertake these conversion practices. And so the reason the conciliatory approach, the conciliation, is the first port of call in most cases is that there is an underlying relationship between the person who's having those conversion practices, I guess, engaged in, and also between the people who are sort of encouraging them to undertake those practices and the people who are, I guess, running those practices. So there might be a very powerful relationship that's in many ways good and supportive, and it's based on, in the contemplation of this explanatory material, a shared faith. And it might be something that's really important for people to hold on to, but it's recognized that it's not actually a useful or helpful thing. It might actually cause someone some harm. And so the reason that people go to the Human Rights Commission for a conciliation is to see that there might be a way to bring people forward. I'm quoting from the explanatory material, bring forward together in a supportive, rights-based and inclusive way, and also to educate people. Now, the explanatory material says that the bill also provides for criminal penalties where a child or person who has impaired decision-making ability in relation to their health or welfare is the subject of conversion practices, or that person is removed from the ACT in order for the conversion practice to be performed. Now, the legislative, the thinking behind that is that there should be criminal penalties to recognise the serious harm that can be caused by conversion practices and to recognise the particular vulnerability of people who aren't able to consent to exposure to harm. So it's sort of assumed by the sponsors of this legislation that kids can't consent to be exposed to the harm that conversion practices might cause them, and neither can people who are otherwise vulnerable people who can't make decisions about their health and welfare. Another reason in the explanatory materials for having criminal penalties is to signal to the community that the ACT government doesn't condone conversion practices in or outside the territory. So what the sponsors of the legislation were trying to do in getting it drafted was to strike an appropriate balance between the rights of individuals and communities to practice their faith and also to prevent harm caused by conversion practices. The commentary in relation to the human rights aspect of this bill is that engages with a number of human rights in the Human Rights Act 2004. It promotes the right to equality and non-discrimination and the right of children to protection. It limits the right to freedom of thought, conscience, religion and belief, freedom of expression, the right to freedom of movement, the right of parents to ensure the religious and moral education of a child in conformity with their convictions, and the right to privacy. And it is considered by the people sponsoring the legislation that the limits on those rights are reasonable and proportionate, because it's said that they're reasonable and proportionate in promoting the right to equality and non-discrimination and the right of children to protection. So that's obviously a judgment call that the sponsors of the legislation have made and wish to communicate in their explanatory material. And they go through it in a great deal of detail. I'm not going to go through that here because my main purpose is to just help explain in very plain terms what the law is all about. So we'll move now on to the second explanatory statement, and I will just highlight the key points arising in that build on the first explanatory statement. So we've now turned to the supplementary explanatory statement of the 27th of August 2020. And this is to be read together with the bill and the previous explanatory statement. And it's just set out in here, the bill does not prohibit a person providing support and affirmation of an individual's identity and choices. Conversion practices do not include practices that assist a person undergoing or considering undergoing a gender transition, assist a person to express their gender identity, provide acceptance, support, or understanding of a person, or facilitate a person's coping skills, social support, or identity exploration and development. It also says again that the bill doesn't prohibit practices in line with professional medical standards. And it says again that the definition of conversion practices is intended to cover practices that actively seek to change the sexuality or gender identity of a person, and instances where someone purports to change the sexuality or gender identity of a person. And importantly, it's said that it's not intended that mere expressions of religious tenets or beliefs, that just means religious views, stating your religious views relating to sexuality or gender identity would constitute a conversion practice, nor would failing to provide support to a person. So they're just trying to clarify, you might have a religious belief that is against homosexuality. Simply having that belief doesn't mean that you are engaging in a conversion practice. Not supporting someone who falls under the LGBT spectrum doesn't mean you're engaging in a conversion practice. And a further clarification that has come out in the supplementary statement is saying that it is not intended that the definition of conversion practices will capture a conversation between a parent and a child or young person for whom they have parental responsibility about exploring or understanding their sexuality or their gender identity. Further, a failure to support a child or young person with their identified sexuality or gender identity is not intended to fall within the scope of a conversion practice for the purpose of this bill. So that's the main crux of the supplementary statement. So now let's turn to the bill, which was passed into law and is now the Sexuality and Gender Identity Conversion Practices Act of 2020. I'm just going to step you through it so you can understand what this law is. It's described as an act about conversion practices relating to sexuality and gender identity and for other purposes, which is pretty standard. Acts are often described in a fairly general way. This act commences 6 months after its notification day, and it has some offences in it, which we will talk more about. One thing that you might not know if you don't deal with legislation a lot is that legislation often has objects at the start. So that is the objects of an act. That means what it's trying to do. So the objects of this act are to affirm that, one, all people have characteristics of sexuality and gender identity, and no combination of those characteristics constitutes a disorder, disease, illness, deficiency, disability, or shortcoming, and to recognize and prevent the harm caused by sexuality and gender identity conversion practices. So that's the purpose of the Act. The Act then sets out what sexuality or gender identity conversion practice actually means. So in this Act, a sexuality or gender identity conversion practice means a treatment or other practice, the purpose or purported purpose of which is to change a person's sexuality or gender identity. I want to explain that a little bit in case you found it confusing. The reason it says the purpose or purported purpose is because the sponsors of the legislation are working on the basis that conversion practices will never work it might be their purpose to change someone's sexuality or gender identity, but maybe we can't even say it's their purpose. Maybe we can only say it's their purported purpose. It's trying to be the purpose, but it can never be the purpose because it will never succeed. So that's what that means. Now, it also says, however, sexuality or gender identity conversion practice does not include a practice the purpose of which is to A, assist a person who is undergoing a gender transition, or B, assist a person who is considering undergoing a gender transition, or C, assist a person to express their gender identity, or D, provide acceptance, support, or understanding of a person, or E, facilitate a person's coping skills, social support, or identity exploration and development. And some examples are given. Diagnosis and assessment of a person with gender dysphoria or gender non-conforming behavior or identity. Support for a person with social adjustments related to gender dysphoria, gender-affirming hormone treatment, other gender transition services, for example, speech pathology services for a transgender or gender-diverse person who wishes to alter their voice and communication to better align with their gender identity, or support for a person exploring or expressing their sexuality. Now, there are some words used in here that some people may not understand. So the term gender dysphoria, if I could just put it in a nutshell, in a non-scientific, non-medical way, gender dysphoria means not being happy with your gender, feeling uncomfortable in relation to it, perhaps feeling actively upset by it. That is a really crude explanation, but it's just trying to get across the gist so that most people listening to this can understand. If you've heard of the word euphoria, like being super happy, dysphoria is kind of the opposite. It doesn't mean you have to be super unhappy. It just means sort of unhappy. Probably my really over-the-top explanation of what euphoria means might have given a bit of confusion there. So dysphoria just means dissatisfaction, discomfort, feeling unhappy, feeling uncomfortable. So gender dysphoria might mean, in practical terms, someone who is born with female sex characteristics but actually feels inside that they are a man, and perhaps when they hit puberty, for example, and start to develop breasts, they feel very uncomfortable with those body parts. That would be one example of gender dysphoria. All right, moving on. It also says that a sexuality or gender identity conversion practice does not include a practice by a health service provider that, in the provider's reasonable professional judgment, is necessary to provide a health service in a manner that is safe and appropriate, or comply with the provider's legal or professional obligations. And health service and health service provider are both terms that are defined under the Health Act 1993, and people are referred to those to see what a health service provider and a health service is. So it refers to another act to help give some clarity. Now, the law then sets out an offence of performing conversion practice on a protected person. So a person commits an offence if the person performs a sexuality or gender identity conversion practice on another person, and that person is a protected person. Now, we talked before about what a protected person is as being a child or someone who isn't able to make decisions about their welfare or medical treatment on their own behalf. And a person commits that offence whether or not the recipient of the offence or the parent or guardian of the recipient of the offence consented to the practice. So even if your parents agree, or even if you agree to have that conversion practice done, and if you're a protected person, it is still an offence even if you consented. And the maximum penalty is a fine, quite a large fine, or imprisonment for 12 months, or both. And the reason I haven't given you the value of the fine is that that will change over time as the definition of something called a penalty unit changes. So it's 150 penalty units, imprisonment for 12 months or both. But let's just say a pretty big fine is a potential punishment. There's another offence set out in the Act. That's the offence of removing a protected person from the ACT for a conversion practice. So a person commits an offence if the person removes another person from the ACT and that person is a protected person and the removal is for the purpose of a sexuality or gender identity conversion practice being performed. And again, very much the same penalties there. 150 penalty units, imprisonment for 12 months or both of those. Because this is a new law, there's a part of this law that says it has to be reviewed as soon as practicable after the second year of operation. So it needs to be looked at to see whether it's working as intended. Now, the Act also sets out the practice for referring people to the Human Rights Commission for conciliation. And it also sets out what then happens if that conciliation doesn't work out. So if the conversion practice complaint has to be referred to the ACT Civil and Administrative Tribunal. So the who, what, when, where, why, how is set out. For the purposes of this podcast, which is really just to give a brief explanation, if the ACT Civil and Administrative Tribunal gets a complaint referred to it by the Human Rights Commission, and if the ACAT is satisfied that the person complained about engaged in a harmful practice, they can make one or more of the following orders. A, that the person complained about not repeat or continue the harmful practice. B, that the person complained about perform a stated reasonable act to redress any loss or damage suffered by a person because of the harmful practice. C, unless the complaint has been dealt with as a representative complaint, which means someone may have engaged in a conversion practice in relation to a bunch of people. So unless it's been dealt with as a representative complaint, that is sort of brought on behalf of a bunch of people, that the person complained about pay to a person a stated amount by way of compensation for any loss or damage suffered by the person because of the harmful practice, or D, any other order the ACAT considers appropriate. And in making those orders, the ACAT has to consider the inherent dignity of all people and the impact of the sexuality or gender identity conversion practice on the person's dignity, and the nature of the sexuality or gender identity conversion practice, and any mitigating factors, and it can consider any other matter that it considers relevant. So some examples that have been given, looking at the impact of the conversion practice, you might be looking at distress, humiliation, loss of self-esteem, loss of enjoyment of life. But mitigating factors that you might be looking at could be something like a public apology that's been given. So someone may have actually realized that by engaging in a conversion practice, they have engaged in a harmful practice and they've given an apology for doing so. And that's something that the ACAT could take into account when deciding what orders to make. Now, I said that the law goes into the who, what, when, where, why of making complaints to the Human Rights Commission, and then if the conciliation there doesn't work out, having them referred to the ACAT. To some degree, it gives detail, but in a lot of respects, that detail is yet to be fleshed out. What would usually happen is that there might be consequential amendments made to the ACT Human Rights Commission's Act or there might be some amendments made to the ACAT Act, but more likely there will probably be a regulation drafted to fill in those blanks about the who, what, when, where, why, how this will actually be carried out in practice that will go along with the Act. And this is really common. It is often the case that the Act or the law sets out a big picture, and then there's a subordinate law, often known as a regulation, that sets out the little bits and pieces as to how this is actually going to be carried out in very nitty-gritty terms. So I had a look and I can't see any such regulation at the moment, I would say it's very likely that there will be one that comes into play before this Act comes into force. And as you know, I mentioned before that this Act is not yet in force. It has been passed, but it doesn't come into operation just yet. It will be effective from the 4th of March 2021. So I hope that you found this informative. There's not a huge amount to say about what the law is at the moment. We know what the intention behind the law is because it was set out in the explanatory statement and the supplementary explanatory statement. And also it is spelled out, I guess, in the definitions of what is a conversion practice in the Act. But for now, that's probably all we know, and it will be very interesting to see what happens in terms of any regulations that might be drafted to fill out the further information about how this is going to work in practice. And it will also be really interesting to see whether the Act has the desired purpose of modifying people's behaviour and perhaps leading to education and bringing people forward together in terms of conversion practices in the ACT community. It was noted in the explanatory statement, and there has been some media coverage, that these practices have occurred in the past in the ACT, and so it's clearly something that the ACT government had at the front of its mind in trying to change the behaviour that's going on in the community that is causing people to subject other people to conversion practices. Ordinarily, I wouldn't apologise for the content of a podcast that I've put out, but I need to be pretty upfront. I'm making this podcast while recovering from surgery. My voice sounds quite bad, and my ability to focus and get my thoughts out as clearly as I normally can is a little bit impaired. So thank you for bearing with me. I thought it was important to get this out because it's an important law for a lot of people, and it's important that we all understand what it says. And hopefully moving forward, when perhaps further laws, those subordinate laws or regulations come out, there might be some further things to say about it. But thank you again for listening. I hope that you found this to be informative. Thank you again for listening to this episode of the Not Just a Lawyer podcast. I'm Sarah Avery of Sarah Avery Legal Practice, and today we have been touching upon the new law in the ACT, which is the Sexuality and Gender Identity Conversion Practices Act of 2020. And as I said, this comes into force on the 4th of March 2021. And if there are further developments after that time, I'll do an updated episode to talk about what is emerging in relation to this law. Thanks again for listening.